This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The Fed focuses on results.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. The Federal Reserve has spelled out what it's going to do next to try and juice the economy, and it's all about the ends rather than the means. As Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports, the Fed's actions will be tied directly to unemployment and inflation rates.
Until now, the Fed's strategy has been open-ended. It just pumped money into the economy, hoping things got better. Now, Fed Chairman Bernanke says the Fed has a more specific game plan. It'll continue to buy bonds to stimulate the economy until employment falls to at least 6.5%, and as long as inflation stays low. Part of the idea is to help consumers plan, according to Morris Davis, a former Fed economist, now at the University of Wisconsin.
It gives them some way of gauging when they think their interest rates and their credit cards might start to rise. If they were thinking about refining, it gives them a time frame for when they think rates might stay low.
Davis says the new Fed strategy will also help businesses plan. He says if they know money will be cheap for a while, they might start borrowing and, yes, hiring. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Unions in Michigan are facing a new reality. They'll have to convince their members to keep paying dues after Republicans passed a law that makes Michigan a right-to-work state. Governor Rick Snyder put his signature on that law, and he joins us now from the state capital, Lansing. Good morning.
Good morning. Happy to be with you.
Well, great to have you back on the show. And I want to start by asking, I mean, obviously, there are a lot of people in your state who are unhappy about this law that you've just signed in. So why did you do it? Why risk making so many people angry?
Well, this is good legislation for two main reasons. First and foremost, it's about giving hardworking Michigan workers the freedom to choose to have the resources go to a union or not. And then secondly, this is about more and better jobs coming to Michigan. If you look at Indiana, they did similar legislation in February, and literally thousands of jobs, new jobs are coming to Indiana, where this was a major consideration in companies' decisions to move to that state.
Are you saying then that companies decided to go to Indiana, for example, because there's less union membership in Indiana?
No, and I don't want to speak for the companies, but it is very clear that companies are looking at Indiana that previously did not. And so I think that's going to happen here in Michigan, which will, we're a much bigger state in terms of population, so we'll bring even more jobs to our state.
Well, make that connection, though. I mean, so you're saying that by not requiring workers to pay union dues, that therefore companies are going to be more attracted to the state. Why would that be?
That's a question for the companies. But there is a strong sense, and companies do look at that. That's something we've suffered here, because I've had that discussion with companies where I've tried to get them to come here, and a number of companies do. We've done well in Michigan in terms of being the comeback state. But there are other companies that simply don't put us on their list of states to look at, and that will get resolved with this question, at least with respect to this particular topic.
Well, one of the big concerns, though, is that this is going to reduce union membership, and it's going to drive wages and benefits lower, and it's going to hurt the middle class.
Well, a couple things I would say. First of all, in terms of the wage question, this is giving unions an opportunity to be more responsive to workers, because in many respects, it should give a situation where unions can't just assume workers are automatically putting in their dollars. If they show a value proposition, they can join. The other thing is most jobs are non-unionized already, even in Michigan.
Well, union membership has fallen dramatically in Michigan and across the country over the last couple of decades, but it's not as though that has translated into some huge boom in employment. I mean, I see the point you're making, but it hasn't been borne out in the evidence, has it?
Well, it's been borne out in the Indiana case. This is how companies themselves are reporting these were factors in their decision-making process. They're now coming to Indiana. They're bringing thousands of jobs and good jobs.
Now, I've mentioned that this move has made a lot of people angry in your state, and they're saying that this is a political move, that, you know, you want to weaken the unions, and you and Republicans want to weaken the unions because union members tend not to support Republicans.
From my perspective, that's not relevant at all. Then that's not how I look at it. I really look as to how I best serve the citizens of Michigan, my customers. When more and better jobs come into our state, it gives opportunities for Michigan workers being pro-workers. It gives unions an opportunity to potentially organize new companies coming to our state.
Have you spoken to businesses who want to relocate to Michigan as a result of this?
I haven't had time. I simply signed the legislation. So, right. No, I have not had that opportunity.
Well, Governor Rick Snyder, Republican of Michigan, thanks so much for talking with us.
Glad to be with you. Take care.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed in global trading this morning, up 1.6% in Tokyo, down 0.25% right now in London. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow slipped 3 points to close at 13,245.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
The Obama administration is asking Congress to approve about $60 billion in federal aid for recovery from Hurricane Sandy, hundreds of millions of dollars of which would go to Amtrak. From our Transportation Nation project at WNYC, Alex Goldmark reports.
Amtrak says it suffered $60 million in losses from Sandy, but it's asking Congress for more than $250 million to upgrade and prepare for next time.
These include things like backup power systems, fully submersible water pumps.
Petra Messick is a planner with Amtrak. She's thinking big and long term, including two new tunnels into Manhattan. The existing six tunnels are roughly a century old.
They will be built in the 21st century, and they will include a host of features that will make them more resilient.
Republicans in Congress have argued that expensive projects like these need a clear revenue stream and that the private sector can foot some of the bill. Robert Puentes of the Brookings Institution says that argument might be a tiny bit harder now.
Superstorm Sandy did change the conversation around infrastructure, particularly in the Northeast. The enormous bills we have from Sandy are not going to be borne by the private sector. It's ridiculous to think so.
But he says there is a role for the private sector. The question is, how big? In New York, I'm Alex Goldmark for Marketplace.
And finally, as you probably noticed, yesterday was December 12th, 2012, or 12-12-12. Not the first time something like that has occurred, of course. And Gawker found the New York Times' article about 12-12-19-12, which reads in part, quote, "When again a person takes pen in hand to indite a letter with the figures 12-12-12 and the dateline, an entire century will have passed and the earth will be peopled by quite entirely another generation. Last year there was an 11-11-11, but alas, there can never be a 13-13-13 unless they change the calendar a great deal." I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. It's the Marketplace Morning Report from APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.